The New Britannia Theater Troupe presents Legacy, directed and produced by Lord Baldrith. Writer and music supervisor, Gabriel Nightshadow. Voice cast, Lord Baldrith as Estito, Quentin Kane, Marcus Blaine, Lucas, and the narrator. Dr. Shroud as Giles, Rupert, Grim Reaper and Dinsu. Amber Rain as Anna Devereaux and Simone Devereaux. Prologue, Midnight, Braemar, 25 years ago. On the fifth level of his stone basement, the famous court composer, Estito, stares at the light emitted from the candelabra as he bites off the last of the tender, seasoned meat from the thigh bone. He places the bare bone on the silver plate in front of him. Estito hears his latest masterpiece playing on the nearby ornate metallic phonograph while he chews. After a few minutes, he is done and washes everything down with red wine from his golden goblet.
Perfectly cooked and seasoned this evening. Perhaps tomorrow night I shall experiment with the seasoning by adding some tarragon.
Suddenly, Estito hears loud voices outside his basement door, which is suddenly forced upon by a large, angry crowd of villagers wielding sharp farm implements.
There's a monster! Seize him!
What is the meaning of this? How dare you barge into my home and interrupt my dinner?
Oh my god! He kept trophies!
The crowd turns to look at the mahogany shelves lining the left wall. Dozens of human skulls are on display, each accompanied by a bronze nameplate indicating the deceased's name, age, and date of consumption. Many in the crowd gasp in horror, and a few of them even begin vomiting. Two burly farmers named Jed and Ted grab Estito and restrain him. The blacksmith, a fellow by the name of Marcus Blaine, takes a sniff of the odor coming from the golden goblet. He raises it to his lips and takes a sip. He immediately spits the wine out and gasps,
"This is not wine, it's human blood!"
"How could you do this? We have known you for years and treated you well. We respected your desire for privacy and the ever-watchful eye of the royal court. You repaid our kindness by kidnapping our children and devouring them."
"I could not help myself. This ever-present hunger for tender human flesh is here in my blood. For I am the last surviving descendant of the Katoth tribe."
"I remember my grandmother telling me tales about the Katoth when I was a child. They were fierce hunters who lived long ago in an area now occupied by Paxlair. They took refuge with the others in caves during the Great Cataclysm 400 years ago. And when food became scarce, they began using their superior hunting skills against their fellow Britannians. They were eventually wiped out by General Jeremiah Dane and his men, at the direction of the surviving members of the Great Council.
A handful of my ancestors managed to survive the Great Purge and retreated even further into the underground caverns, where they remained until it was safe to return to the surface once more.
We heard that the guard, Captain Duncan Congreve, and his men will be by in a few hours to arrest you for your crimes. But we will not take a chance that your influence will cause the magistrate to set you free. We demand justice now. Bring him.
Jed and Ted force Estito forward. Soon the crowd is gathered in the backyard of Estito's isolated manor.
How shall we dispose of this criminal?
Burn him.
Stone him. Let us decide by a show of hands. All those in favor of burning, raise your hands.
Seven people raise their hands.
Those in favor of stoning?
11 people raise their hands.
Stoning it is, then. Jed and Ted bind the criminal to the stone ankh.
Jed and Ted use steel chains to bind Estito to the large stone ankh. Everyone in the crowd begins picking up the largest stones they can find on the ground.
Any last words?
You may kill me tonight, but this is not the last you have heard of Katoff.
Astido spits in Quentin's face.
That's what you think.
Quentin wipes the spit off his face.
Come on, let's get this over with quickly. I need to get home soon. My pregnant wife, Mara, must be wondering why I'm still out playing poker with the guys.
Astido suddenly smiles wickedly and begins laughing as the villagers start throwing stones at him. 15 minutes later, he breathes his last as his bloody and battered form goes limp.
Jed and Ted weigh down his body and toss it into the well over there. The rest of you go inside. Throw some animal blood around and smash the furniture. That way it'll look like robbery, plus abduction and or murder. We must not let guard Captain Congreve and his men learn the truth about what we have done here tonight.
The crowd proceeds to carry out Quentin's instructions. Another 15 minutes later, Jed and Ted dump Astido's body into the well as the remaining villagers disperse. As Astido's body falls down the well, his eyes stare vacantly at the blood-red shattered moon in the dark night sky. One year ago, newsflash, Jack Twit missing, presumed dead, by Anish Cumberbatch. Authorities in Braemar are investigating the mysterious disappearance of local residents Jack Twit, last seen exiting the local tavern late Friday evening. Eyewitnesses report that Mr. Twit, who was a close personal friend of Lord Enmar, was rather inebriated that evening, lamenting how much he missed his Hollywood lifestyle and his recent rejection for membership by the New Britannia Theater Troupe. A search of his manner suggests that he may have been abducted or even killed, as evidenced by all of the smashed furniture and blood spatter found in his library. When contacted, one of the co-founders of the troupe, Asclepius, had this to say. Yes, it's true that Mr. Twit applied to join our group, but Lord Baldrith and I felt that his acting skills were only average. Furthermore, during his audition, he was rather arrogant and kept hitting on our lead actress, Amber Rain, and Lady Adnor. In light of all this, we felt that he would be a disruptive influence to our organization and decided to reject his application. Many of the local residents did not seem to have a very high opinion of Mr. Twit, who was an outlander. Quentin Kane, a local farmer, complained that Mr. Twit had seduced his innocent teenage daughter, Melody, and had gotten her pregnant, and often used to make fun of his frail older son, Obadiah, while he was growing up. Seamstress Anna Devereaux said that Mr. Twit, who was employed as a drama teacher at the Braemar School for the Gifted, had also been secretly seeing her teenage daughter, Sophie, who was one of his students. Marcus Blaine, the local blacksmith, claimed that Mr. Twit had also seduced the wives of many of the village's most prominent citizens, which allowed him to live rather lavishly in the small farming community. Jed Crumfelt, his next-door neighbor, complained that Mr. Twit was a rather obnoxious fellow who often held loud wild parties at his town home late at night on the weekends and goaded Jed's teenage son Lucas and his schoolmates to fight him for gold in the secret caged arena he had constructed in his basement. Rumors that the authority had received a note from the mysterious anti-outlander group the Home Guard, claiming responsibility for Mr. Twit's disappearance, were flatly denied by their official spokesman, Captain Norden Hacktel. However, our good friend Guard Bob was able to confirm its existence, but not its authenticity. It should be noted that Guard Bob was suddenly transferred to the port city of Adoris late last night, and his duties have been assumed by his replacement guard, Michael, formerly of Owl's Head. 1 month later. Newsflash. Blood Manor sold to new owner by Anish Cumberbatch. The mysterious Baron Nikolai Darmu has purchased the famous Blood Manor here in Braemar. As listeners are well aware, both of its previous owners, the famous court composer Estido and the outlander known as Jack Twitt vanished under mysterious circumstances. Foul play was suspected in both cases based on the amount of blood found at the scene, but no bodies were ever recovered. Baron Darmu moved into the manor late last week, but has rarely been seen in public. When reached for comment, his servant, a rather tall, thin fellow by the name of Giles, explained that Baron Darmu is a very busy businessman and spends most of his time away conducting business in Rift's End. The present, 10 p.m., Halloween night. The blood-red shattered moon hangs in the dark night sky as the costumed teenagers Simone, Lucas, and Rupert approach Blood Manor. Simone, a beautiful raven-haired 16-year-old, is wearing a zombie mask. Lucas, a muscular blonde 17-year-old boy, is wearing a bear mask. Rupert, a tall, thin 16-year-old, bespectacled, brown-haired lad, is wearing a wolf mask.
Are you sure we should be doing this? This place really gives me the creeps.
What's the matter, Rupert? Are you scared?
No. No.
I still don't know why the village elders decided to start celebrating this Earth holiday known as Halloween. This zombie mask is really uncomfortable.
It's because of the many outlanders who have been settling here in Braemar lately. They started having an influence on our culture.
All I know is that I love this Earth holiday. I love sweets.
Careful there, Lucas. Eat too many of those and you'll start looking like Darkstar's blimp.
Yeah, and then you'll end up dumping me and start dating Rupert. Huh. Not much of a chance of that ever happening.
Both Lucas and Simone fail to notice the sad look in Rupert's eyes, for he has been secretly in love with Simone since they were both 7 years old. Rupert manages a half-hearted laugh and looks away.
Have either of you ever seen what Baron Darmu looks like?
No, but my dad met him once. He said that he is a tall but rather chubby middle-aged fellow with jet black hair, piercing blue eyes, and a Van Dyke beard. Dad also mentioned that Lord Darmu speaks with a strange foreign accent.
Rupert strokes his chin and ponders things.
How interesting. He probably hails from the Eastern Lands.
Well, all I know is that none of the other kids from school will dare go to his house for treats this evening. We will be the first.
As they approach the manor, they notice the 6 jack-o'-lanterns and 6 skeletons scattered about the front yard. An ominous-looking statue of the Grim Reaper is also on display. 9 giant spiders are mounted on the exterior of the house. A solitary light is visible on the second floor, and a rotund shape is visible behind the curtains, most likely Baron Darmu himself. As Lucas uses the skull-shaped knocker on the front door, Simone and Rupert glance at the ornate skull candles on either side of the doorway. The door creaks open, and a tall, thin, gray-haired man, dressed in a servant's uniform, addresses them.
Ah, our first guests for the evening. Please come in and make yourselves comfortable. I will fetch the treats and apple cider from the kitchen.
I really don't think we should be going inside.
Come on, Rupert. We can't turn down the nice man's invitation. Right, Simone?
I guess so. But as long as you're here, Lucas, I am sure that everything will be okay.
Giles ushers them into the parlor and shuts the door behind them. The teenagers fail to notice that there is a glowing, mystical rune engraved on the deadbolt lock. Giles ushers them into the parlor, where a silver punch bowl and porcelain cups await them on the table.
Please help yourselves to some warm apple cider. I will fetch the pastries and candies from the kitchen.
Giles ventures into the side room as the 3 teenagers remove their masks and use the ladle to fill their cups.
This is mighty tasty apple cider. I detect a touch of cinnamon and nutmeg in it.
Lucas notices all the rare and valuable antiques in the room.
Wow, this guy is really rich.
I heard that Baron Darmu is in the import and export business.
Suddenly, they hear a loud crash from the kitchen.
Oh my, what was that?
Let's investigate. You two, stay behind me, just in case.
The three teenagers enter the kitchen. Simone begins screaming. The serving tray and pastries are strewn about the kitchen floor. Guile's dead body lies there, too. It appears that he has been stabbed several times, as evidenced by the large blood spots on his uniform. A long butcher knife is sticking out of his chest, and his vacant eyes stare upward.
Let's get out of here!
The trio rush to the front door. Lucas spends several minutes trying to turn the knob, but to no avail.
Arg! I can't seem to turn a knob! Let's try the back door!
The trio pass by the kitchen again on the way to the back door.
I'm scared, Lucas.
Nothing for you to be afraid of, Simone. I will protect you from...
Suddenly, Lucas is decapitated by a scythe and his body falls to the ground. His severed head rolls to a stop directly in front of Simone. Both Simone and Rupert begin screaming as a tall, black-robed figure emerges from the kitchen. He is wearing a Grim Reaper mask and is breathing heavily.
Upstairs!
Rupert quickly grabs Simone's hand and pulls her along as he races up the stairway. The Grim Reaper drops his scythe and pulls out the long, bloody butcher knife from underneath his robe. He runs up the stairs after Rupert and Simone. Both Rupert and Simone try to hide in one of the rooms on the second floor, but find that all the doors are locked. As they reach the end of the hallway, the Grim Reaper appears at the other end.
Make your way up to the roof. I'll try to hold him off.
Rupert grabs a longsword, which happens to be lying on the floor, and charges toward the Grim Reaper.
Rupert, no!
I won't let you harm the woman I love!
Rupert begins wildly swinging the longsword at the Grim Reaper. The Grim Reaper laughs as he easily dodges Rupert's attacks and then disembowels him with a long butcher knife. Rupert drops his sword and coughs up blood.
Oh, damn! Never a slayer around when you need one.
Rupert falls to the ground and dies. Simone screams as she turns and runs up the staircase to the third floor. The Grim Reaper pursues her. On the third floor, Simone finally finds an unlocked door and quickly enters, bolting the door shut behind her. She places a nearby chair against the door and then looks around. She is in the main bedroom. She notices a mannequin by the open window. A baron's tunic is draped on it, with a lot of padding sewed underneath it. On a nearby table is a head mannequin with a jet black wig and a fake Van Dyke beard on it.
Oh my god! This is a disguise! And that means that the Baron Darmu doesn't really exist!
That's right. You have discovered my little secret, Simone. My immense wealth really derives from my work as a Grand Master Bard.
Simone turns around and sees the Grim Reaper standing there.
How did you get in here? That door is still locked.
I used a secret door, my dear. Giles doesn't exist either. I just pretended to be dead so that all the people would panic!
The Grim Reaper removes his mask. Simone gasps.
I recognize you. You're Obadiah Kane, Quentin Cain's eldest son, but you don't look frail at all.
I grew up to be big and strong by consuming a lot of meat. It seems that I have developed this hunger from my real father.
Hey, your real father?
Oh yeah. The court composer Estido was my true father. He was having an affair with Mary Kane. That makes me the last of the Katoff. I have given myself a new name to reflect my heritage. Dinsu. Baby. Your friends are much too dry and tough for my taste, but I will take great delight in feasting on your tender flesh tonight.
No!
Simone turns toward the open window. She tries to make a break for it, but Dinsu is too fast. He pounces on her and knocks her to the ground. Dinsu suddenly licks her right cheek and becomes visibly aroused.
Soon you shall become a part of me, Simone. Baby. Sweet baby.
Dinsu grabs Simone's head with both of his hands. He twists it 180 degrees, causing her neck to snap. Dinsu stands up and slings Simone's dead body over his right shoulder. He walks over to the bookcase on the far side of the room and pulls on a certain book. A section of the bookcase swings open, revealing a hidden staircase. Dinsu begins whistling a merry tune as he proceeds to walk the dimly lit staircase to his basement. The end. Music credits. The following music tracks used in this production are licensed under Creative Commons Attribution 4.0 International, http://creativecommons.org/licenses/by/4.0/, and can be found at https://machinimasound.com. Damnation by Jens Kilstoft. Waltz of the Undertaker by Aaron Spencer. Derelict Ship by Per Kilstoft. The following music track is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution 3.0, unported. http://creativecommons.org/licenses/by/3.0/, and can be found at http://www.matthewpablo.com. Beyond the Clouds, themed for a modern broadcast, by Matthew Pablo. The following music tracks are licensed under Creative Commons Attribution 3.0 unported, http://creativecommons.org/licenses/by/3.0/, and can be found at http://www.opengameart.org. Toccata and Fugue in D Minor by John Sebastian Bach, performed by Mario4536. Horror Game Menu by Eric Mateus. Sound Effects Credits. All sound effects used in this production are licensed under Creative Commons Attribution 3.0 unported, http://creativecommons.org/licenses/by/3.0/. The following sound effects can be found at http://soundbible.com. Decapitation, Head Fall Off, recorded by Mike Koenig. Gutting Someone, recorded by Mike Koenig. Neck Breaking, recorded by Mike Koenig. The following sound effects can be found at http://opengameart.org. Falling Body, recorded by Remaxin. Echoes. From the Cavern was brought to you by Lord Baldrith, Asclepius, and Sir Style Teakle. Do you have a piece you would like the New Britannia Theatre Troupe to read? Please contact us at LordBaldrith@thecaverns.net, Asclepius@thecaverns.net, or Style@thecaverns.net. Also, Avatars Radio needs your help. Go to avatarsradio.com and click the Patreon link.